Rogers.
Thanks, good afternoon. I just want to discuss with you first the control, if you like, in terms of the scale of activities in the local shopping centre zone as proposed. I know Mr. Heath has given some expert advice and he's come up with a suggestion or his opinion as being 300 square metres as a useful control in terms of scale.
Or retail zones.
Yeah, yeah. And I was interested in understanding what Steve trying to sort of get a bead of trying to compare what he's recommending or what his opinion is compared to what's on the ground, as it were.
Yes.
So my first question is, I accept and understand that he's an expert and he's expressed his opinion, which you've taken into account. But I'm just wondering whether or not you've assessed his view independently or have you just accepted his opinion as 300 square metres is the right number?
I have accepted his opinion and I haven't gone through the process of ground truthing. So when you mentioned about asking what the floor area is of the dairy at Hawea, that's not an exercise that I had undertaken. I've been reflecting on the rule, so 15.5.9, which has those limits in it. And I'm going to give it further consideration, particularly insofar as it would relate to tenancies that have multiple functions. So where you have several retail activities that are within the same development or within the same tenancy, and whether that rule would need to be amended to provide for those instances where you might have multiple uses. It could be argued that they are individual retail activities. I note also that in Mr. Heath's evidence, he refers to retail tenancies, mm-hmm. whereas I've used the word activities.
Yes.
And I've done this because the term tenancies isn't currently used in the PDP, and also insofar as the parking requirements in the transportation chapter, which rely on the open currently, so they'll be reviewed in stage two, also has car parking standards in relation to activities. But I'm going to give some further thought to the concept of tenancies and whether or not that would provide greater clarity for those sites where you might have a dairy that has multiple functions. So multiple retail components, which I think should assist with the clarity of that role.
All right, and will you also think about the actual number, the 300 square metres in terms of its appropriateness?
Yes.
I know Mr. Heath put forward the view that, if you like, well, what I understood him to be telling me was, and from a regular's evidence, that, if you like, the type of retail activity you'd normally expect in the zone,
yes,
might occupy an area significantly less than the 300 square metres, but he thought there should be some flexibility allowing for, you know, well, just flexibility in the zone by having a larger footprint.
Yes. And as you, I know from your questioning of Mr. Heath, you clarified that the 300 square metres would include the front of house and the rear of house, and that also requires clarification.
Yeah, because sometimes in some plans they... you know, they just look at the actual area where the retail activity occurs and they have specific exclusions, others don't.
Yes.
And I just wanted to better understand what was proposed here.
Yes, I'll look at other plans as well.
All right. Okay. The other issue was the types of retail activity. You recall Mr. Heath was talking about some types of retail activity that should be excluded.
Yes.
And if we track through to the recommended revised chapter, then Am I correct that we should be looking, in terms of objectives and policies, we're looking at 15.2.1.5?
That's correct.
And maybe I just haven't spotted it, but is there a list or something of that sort which will detail these restrictive retail activities?
They are identified at the role level.
Yep, and what's the relevant ones there?
Is rule 15.4.6.
So it's only going to be those ones listed there. Well, how does that work?
So this is the activity table. Mm-hmm. So these activities are non-compliant.
They can be non-compliant. Yeah.
And of course, the fashion stores is disputed by the public form evidence.
The changing topics, the use of the urban design panel,
yes.
In your report, you don't favour or recommend change from the status quo.
That's correct.
Do you see that there's any issue taking a broader perspective of the plan itself, from parts of the plan incorporating urban design requirements and other parts not?
Indeed.
Question of being consistent and easy to apply and easy to read, understand.
In terms of use of the panel or urban design requirements generally?
Well, both. Yeah.
I think all the officers between the chapters have been consistent in our response to the request through the NZR submission that the urban design panel be in some way a mandatory requirement. So.
Been consistent in opposing that and not supporting that.
That's correct. Insofar as urban design, we are for some chapters recommending urban design guidelines. For this chapter, however, I haven't made that recommendation. In my view, this chapter doesn't have the same emphasis on urban design as you have for the business mixed use zone, for instance.
Section 42A report in paragraph 916, you've referred to McDermott Consultants Retail Assessment.
Yes.
That's in the section 32 report for the Fitzroy Valley Road Centre, is that?
That's correct. It's a tentative assessment and it's a link at the end of the section 32.
Are you satisfied with the veracity of that report?
On reflection, and now since having the evidence provided by Mr. Heath, I do think that it warrants another look at, insofar as the extent of the Condrina Valley Road pocket of the zone. And that would occur through the hearings on mapping, and we do have a submission from Willow Ridge seeking a rezoning. So this one, for this site, we'll be going to the hearing on rezones. Could I speak to the One Hanson Road site, which I know is the other large site?
Yes.
And to give you some background on that site, that was another one that was brought to us by the landowner and recommended by the landowner, or suggested for inclusion within the local shopping centre zone. Dan Wales from John Edmonds Associates, which is a local planning consultancy, he did the bulk of the drafting of the bespoke rules and policies that would apply to the One Hanson Road site. And then we accepted them and adopted them as our own and took it forward from there. Mr. Wells also provided the Tim Kelly traffic assessment, which is also appended to the Section 32. In respect of that site, we've received submissions from Spence Farms seeking, there are three points of submission. One relates to acoustic requirements. Another relates to the relief that they're seeking to remove the restrictions on residential and visitor accommodation activities at ground floor level. They're seeking to have that all removed. And the third is around building heights. Spence Farms don't appear to be pursuing their submission, and I have been made aware by Jo Fife, who's the resource consents team leader, that she's had a pre-application meeting with John Edmonds regarding a high density residential development that is going to come in via a resource consent before Christmas that will be across the One Hanson Road site.
So the zoning may be totally inappropriate.
Exactly.
For what is,
yes,
the landowner is just going for what they can get.
That's correct. Yeah. I do believe that the site has changed hands or is in the process of changing hands. When I spoke to Mr. Edmonds 3 weeks ago, that's where it was in this process. The proposal for the resource consent does include a commercial component, but it's very minor. And it would, my understanding is it would just serve the residents that would reside on that site rather than trying to attract people from beyond the site. For the One Hanson Road site, we don't have a submission seeking to rezone that site. When I spoke to Mr. Edmonds 3 weeks ago, I did make the suggestion that he could try and lodge a late submission seeking to have an alternative zone, but he has elected not to do that, it appears.
But on the other hand, it does raise the issue when it comes to the mapping hearings, whether the zoning bears any relationship to reality.
Yes. Bearing in mind that we haven't formally received that resource consent application yet, and it's been approved.
But the mapping hearings won't start until July 2017.
Yes.
So. Okay. It's unsurprising, and it may explain why the landowner is not appearing in support of the zoning.
Yeah, that's right. And that road at One Hanson, that site at One Hanson Road, does have a bit of a history in terms of some consents that have been applied for, and one of things and unimplemented. So there's one for a car wash facility. Plan change, private plan change 43 was went partway through the private plan change process to try and establish a mixed use zone there, and then the requestor put it on hold, and it's remained on hold. So in applying the local shopping centre zone there, there was some piggybacking on the work that was done for private plan change 43. So the site has remained largely undeveloped, it appears that the respective landowners have tried to find a suitable activity and nothing's eventuated so far.
You were given a blank slate on the slide. What would you recommend to us would be the appropriate resource management regime for it?
Well, considering Mr. Heath's evidence he considers that the site could warrant having a smaller local shopping centre component, with the balance being residential zone. The operative zone of the site is low density residential, with a small portion of rural general at the rear of the site, the topography changes. It's really awkward trying to figure out what to do with that site, because it would be relatively low amenity and it's right next to a major intersection. But then again, it does have good transport links. It is within the outer control boundary, on the periphery of it. Yes. It accounts for the workshop, when we were workshopping these chapters, the idea of a transport interchange was debated, and we looked at whether or not the local shopping centre zone, in terms of the permissive regime of activities, would enable a transport interchange if the council did want to work with the regional council to establish that there. But that site wasn't ideal. The more ideal site would have been on the other side of the roundabout, closer to the lake.
I just wonder if, after you've made those deletions and additions to it, if you've ever read it out loud to yourself.
It needs a verb. I think it should read, a range of activities are enabled.
A range of activities what, sorry?
I believe, well, it currently reads, as per the revised version, a range of activities to meet the day-to-day needs of the community and ensure that they are on a limited scale that supplements the function of town centres. I would like to amend it through the reply to read, a range of activities are enabled to meet the day-to-day needs.
Should it include the term centres? I'm just wondering, given that that's a local shopping centre zone, but it's not a scattering of activities. It's a focal point of activities.
Yes, right.
I just wonder if you can think about that.
In terms of the zone being a condensed spot commercial zone, is that what you mean?
Yes. In each instance, there is a focal point to serve the community.
Yes.
I think that's what the objective is and what you're trying to convey.
Yes. And that would, in reviewing this chapter, I also looked at the commercial overlays within the townships chapter, which have quite a different function. They're a lot more aspirational, and they provide for a mixture of commercial and residential, sort of more salt and pepper approach.
Yes,
and this is a much more concentrated.
Just looking at policy 15.2.3.5. I may be wrong, but my understanding of reading all the evidence was that the evidence was that that couldn't be achieved, that policy. And maybe given what you've told us about One Hanson Road, but we should put square brackets around it in the meantime.
I think so.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, certainly in terms of the One Hanson Road side, if we are able to apply a different zone there, either through this process or through a variation, certainly the bespoke One Hanson Road provisions have come out. Which I quite like because I'm not a fan of bespoke provisions.
Yes.
If we can avoid them where possible.
I'm in agreement with that. I think that discussions with Fife suggest that that application is proceeding and likely to grow legs and become active.
This is the
on one Hanson Road. It might be wise to advise that you conclude that a variation to change the zoning was rather might be wise to advise us sooner rather than later, even if that will be after your reply. But I wouldn't wait till the mapping.
No, I'll be advising on that in my reply.
Most of my questions are to do with one Hanson Road.
So
we're
going to ask
you
I think
just in the 15.432, I think you talk about the pretty spatial plan. I think that would fail the environment course tests on framework plans from the Auckland Council decision. I'm not sure how to look at it carefully, but it may have that same problem. Rule 15.5.3. Does acoustic insulation required throughout the entire zone?
Yes, there's a mixed use zone, and it's the same for within the town centres and business mixed use zone. Yes, we have
so
included insulation.
The local centre, that is.
That's correct, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Carlin's provided evidence regarding.
That's where the airport is open. There's only Frankton.
Or the OCD, but
yeah.
This rule would still apply to the balance of the shopping center zone. So any of the sites outside of the OCD, this rule would apply to.
Is rule 15.5.7, do we really need the exemption for wind farms? And following exemption two, sound of aircraft operations in Queenstown won't happen within the zone either, will they?
How do you mean?
Well, the aircraft operations won't be within the zone.
Not within the zone. Okay. I'll have a look at that. Thank you.
Should be the same in every chapter.
This is to do with the.
This is in 15.6.2.2.
Yes. The business mixed-use zone replaces the business zone of the Auckland District Plan. The zone is located in the Gould Road area of Queenstown and the Anderson Heights area of Warrnambool. Both locations are within walking distance from their respective town centres, and both locations contain established commercial activities. The business mixed-use zone proposes a shift from the operative regime, primarily through the introduction of residential activities and the exclusion of industrial activities. The zone also seeks to achieve high-quality design outcomes, which are not sought by the operative business zone. I recommend that the framework, structure and majority of the provisions of the notified chapter are retained as notified, and I recommend a number of changes shown in the redrafted chapter. The most significant changes I recommend are: A. Maintaining the building heights as notified. However, in respect of the restricted discretionary building heights for the Gould Road area of the zone, I recommend significant amendments to notified policy 16.2.2.7 and the inclusion of additional matters of discretion and an additional rule to redraft the rule 16.5.8, which requires that any fourth story, excluding basements and above, shall be set back a minimum distance of 3 metres from the building frontage. E. Acknowledgement of Corn Creek, which runs through the Gould Road area of the zone, and a new policy in matters of discretion to encourage naturalisation of the creek and its incorporation into site layout, design and landscaping. C. Introduction of minimum landscaping requirements, and D. Relaxation of the height recession planes applied at the northern boundary of sites that adjoin a residential zone. I have read and considered the pre-lodged evidence submitted by Mr. Scott Freeman on behalf of the submitter specified there. Mr. Freeman accepts the majority of changes I recommend in the redrafted chapter, with two exceptions. First, Mr. Freeman requests that redraft policy 16.2.1.4 and rule 16.5.3, which are concerned with limiting the location of residential and visitor accommodation activities on sites fronting Gould Road to ensure that commercial activities have privacy at street level, are amended to provide more specificity. Mr. Freeman recommends that rather than using the term fronting, a prescribed setback of 10 metres should be introduced. I agree with Mr. Freeman that prescribing a setback would provide greater certainty regarding the application of the policy and associated rule, and also that the term fronting is not defined and consequently may be open to different interpretations. I consider that replacing the word fronting with adjoining in both the policy and rule is appropriate, so that they apply to sites that adjoin Gould Road. In addition, I consider that it would be appropriate to amend the policy and rule to only apply to residential and visitor accommodation activities located within 10 metres of the site boundary adjoining Gould Road. Please note, however, that I wish to use Mr. Freeman to speak to the panel before making final recommendations as to the specific wording of the relevant policy and rule, which I will provide in my reply evidence. Secondly, with regard to redraft policy 16.2.2.9 and rule 16.4.2, insofar as the rule applies to Hall Creek, Mr. Freeman highlights a number of issues with the practicalities and realisation of daylighting in Hall Creek. Mr. Freeman is of the view that there would be uncertainty regarding the application of policy 16.2.2.9 and the relevant part of rule 16.4.2. It is Mr. Freeman's view that rather than providing a policy and rule framework through the business mixed use provisions, the daylighting of Hall Creek should be subject to a separate process undertaken outside of the PDP process. It is my view that the district plan is the appropriate method for addressing this issue, as it enables Hall Creek to be considered in conjunction with specific development proposals. The relevant policy and rule were drafted with a view to provide flexibility for situations where daylighting the creek would significantly impact on the ability for a site to be developed. However, on reflection, I accept Mr. Freeman's view that the drafting of these provisions may result in uncertainty as to their application. I wish to hear Mr. Freeman speak before the panel before making any specific recommendations on any provisions for the ruling of the policy and rule. I agree with Mr. Freeman's suggestion that a council led process could be used to assist with achieving the daylighting of the group in a coordinated manner. However, I consider that such a process should be implemented in parallel with use of the district plan provisions. It is my view that such a process could be incorporated into the development of future design guidelines for the business mixed use zone. I have also read and considered the late evidence tabled by Mr. Matt Norwell on behalf of Bunnings. I note that Mr. Norwell accepts the recommended revised chapter insofar as the inclusion of new policy 6.2.2.8 any inclusion of the definition of the new definition of trade supply. Mr. Normal seeks that notified rule 16.4.6 is amended so that the first matter of discretion applies to neighbouring residential properties rather than neighbouring properties generally. Insofar as the reasoning for the relief provided by Mr. Norwell, I note that in the recommended revised chapter, I have recommended the deletion of notified policy 16.2.1.4, which concerns itself with residential community. I also note that Mr. Norwell incorrectly states that all residential activities establishing in the business mixed use zone are required to be located above ground floor level, which is not the case. Mr. Norwell correctly points out that the purpose of the business mixed use zone is to enable a high intensity mix of compatible residential and non-residential activities. In my view, Rule 16.4.6 would assist with achieving this purpose. My view regarding the relief sought as outlined in the Section 42A report therefore remains unchanged.
Thank you. Just take you to your 42A report. In paragraphs 6.6 and 6.8, there you're discussing enabling of residential activities in the business mixed-use zone. And I'm just wondering, is there any feel for sort of the likely yield of those residential activities within those zones?
I haven't undertaken any modelling, but the strategic directions reply from Matthew Pates, dated the 7th of April 2016.
Can I just grab that name again?
Yes, of course. The reply of Matthew Pates for the strategic direction and urban development chapters, and that report is dated 7th of April this year. And at paragraph 7.18 of Mr. Pate's evidence, he provides his view as to the dwelling capacity. And it is based on some assumptions. He hasn't considered it as a maximum yield. 12 to 20 metre heights are restricted discretionary, so he has factored in that not all development would seek to go to those heights.
So it's a kind of, it's a multi-unit kind of apartment type development?
That's correct. We don't have certainty as to whether or not the residential activities would necessarily always be provided above ground floor level, so there could be office space. And there's nothing in the chapter that would direct any development to provide a certain percentage of residential versus commercial. But in my refer to the revised chapter, policy 16.2.2.7.
Just a moment, Ms. Bobon.
Oh, of course, sorry.
Just give Commissioner Rogers Mr. Pates's reply so that he can see what he said.
I was talking about policy 6.2.2.7, which is on 16 bar 2 of the revised chapter. So I've rewritten this policy, and the third bullet point. So this policy is in relation to the restricted discretionary heights, and the third bullet point I've included whether the increase in height would facilitate the provision of residential activity. And that wasn't in the notified version. So that is now a consideration at policy level and also 16.5 from 8, which is the maximum building height rule, and it's included in the last bullet point in the revised notice of decision.
Moving forward to paragraph 9.2. And this is the question or issue of whether or not visitor accommodation should be specifically referred to in objective 16.2.1.
Yes.
And you favour that it's not specifically referred to because you think it's caught by residential?
No, so in my view, and I said it in paragraph 9.3.
It falls within the broad category of non-residential.
That's correct. So it's specifically excluded from the notified definition of residential activities. So in that policy is notified, so if you ignore the underlying text, it says an area comprising a high intensity mix of compatible residential and non-residential activities is available.
And visitor accommodation falls, as you say, within the broad category of non-residential activities.
That's right.
And the definition of...
That's by virtue of its exclusion from the notified definition of residential activity.
Do you think including the words visitor accommodation, does it cause any harm or difficulty in that objective?
No, it's just it could lead to confusion as to what a non-residential activity is, not that it's defined in the plan.
Just that would it mean that the reader of the plan with the underlined words not included, does that mean that they've got to go and look at the definition too?
Yes, they would have to go and look at the definition of residential
activities. So for the reader of the plan, I'm just suggesting it might be easier if the words were there, i.e. visitor accommodation.
Yes, it would improve legibility. You wouldn't have to refer back to that definition.
Moving forward on to paragraph 9.6, maybe I'm just missing some context here, but your paragraph 16.2.2.8, I was just wanting you to sort of clarify what's actually meant there.
That's what was thought. So what it's trying to do is to acknowledge that non-residential activities are provided for in the zone, and they have often have different requirements in terms of their operation and function to residential activities.
I guess it was the wording applying consideration of the operational functional requirements of non-residential activity. What are we trying to do here? We're trying to understand what those functional requirements, operational and functional requirements actually are, or?
We're acknowledging as the intention is that they are acknowledged. I can revisit the wording of that if you'd like.
Moving forward to your issue two, that's enabling the right mix of activities, and I was looking at paragraph 10.5, and that sort of commences with a discussion of the H.W. Richardson Group submission.
which has since been withdrawn.
Which is from?
Which has since been withdrawn.
All right, okay. Yes. However, does that mean that in terms of what's now proposed for business mixed use zone, that activities that were similar to those carried out by the HW Richardson Group, will they have difficulty being able to continue within the zone?
If they are lawfully established, then no. If they were looking to increase the scale of their operation, then it would be a non-compliant activity because they would be an industrial activity, which is now has a non-compliant activity status. And that's part of encouraging the inappropriate mix of activities was bringing residential in, pushes industrial out.
Okay, and in terms of the effects on current industrial users within the zone, what's the sort of scale of that impact on, are there a large number of activities which will be affected by this change? Or?
Insofar as the Anderson Heights pocket of the zone, which is in Wanaka, there is, in the northern part of the zone, there's a panel beta, a automotive repairs, and a place where your tyres changed on your car.
Mm-hmm.
The panel beta and the automotive repairs may fall into an industrial category. I'll need to double check that though.
And are these activities you're describing, are they long established activities?
Yes, and to my knowledge, yes, they are.
Yeah, and have they had any kind of history of seeking to expand?
I don't know.
Okay, so that's for the Andersons site and the other site.
So in the Gorge Road area, there is the Allied Concrete site. There's a rock gas. Where you get your gas bottles filled up. There's rock gas. And the northern portion, which has been excluded, which is in the operative business zone, an industrial place, so I'll refer you to the map.
Mm-hmm.
We've excluded an area that was in the operative business zone and referred it to stage two to be considered for the industrial zone.
So this is map 32.
This is map 32. It's the blue area. So that is currently zoned.
Oh, yeah. Zoned subject to stage 2.
Yeah. So that's currently zoned business zone. And because of the natural activities there, which are mainly light industrial, we've excluded it from the business mixed use zone to be considered for the industrial zone.
Alright. And the activities you're running through for Gorge Road, if there's HW Richardson, they were the only kind of submitter in relation to current, if you like, industrial activities.
And so far as industrial activities, we have had submissions from Michael and Bunnings regarding trade supplier activities. And we didn't receive any submissions really, regarding specifically the Anderson Heights, apart from one submission supporting it.
Mm. Alright, but again, say for example, for the rock gas activity, any future expansion will be a non-compliant activity.
Mm.
The drive through some Gorge Road, that they be able to continue?
Let me check the definition of natural. So the industrial activity is defined in Chapter 2 of the PDP as the use of land and buildings for the primary purpose of manufacturing, fabricating, processing, packing, or associated storage of goods. So I think you'd be drawing a long bow to include dry cleaning in that. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Is it processing?
I'm not going to come up this Taking for your opinion.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. We also have definition of commercial activity, which is dry cleaning and certainly. The definition of commercial activity, would you like me to read that one out?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So that commercial activity means the use of land and buildings for the display, offering, provision, sale or hire of goods, equipment or services, and includes shops, postal services, markets, showrooms, restaurants, takeaway food bars, professional, commercial and administrative offices, service stations, motor vehicle sales, sale of liquor and associated parking areas. It excludes recreational, community and service activities, home occupations, visitor accommodation, registered holiday homes and registered homestays.
Okay, so the land area occupied, so by, for example, by the rock gas activity in Gorge Road, does that sort of take up a large portion or a small portion? Or?
It's one site.
Just one site?
Within, yeah, one site.
So in the Gorge Road planning map 32, there's some sites that are quite large compared to others.
Yes. I can respond to that in my reply and give you the specific site, if you wish. And I can further interrogate if there are any additional sites that I'm not aware of.
And if those activities are, you know, they're likely to remain, then is there some provisions that deal with ensuring that, for example, residential activity that may locate close by doesn't give rise to reverse sensitivity effects and the proper ways in which the two activities can live side by side?
Rule 16.5.5 includes an acoustic insulation requirement, and it's the same as that for all the local shopping centres.
16.5.5, so that deals with acoustic.
Yes.
Are there any other provisions that deal with other effects that might arise?
No.
Just switching that to visitor accommodation.
Yes.
So that's going to form all part and parcel of the business mixed use zone.
Yes.
Is there any possibility or suggestion of impacts on existing zoned areas where visitor accommodation is already provided? Is there any likelihood of tension between providing for more visitor accommodation, or is it just simply rather it's meeting a need for increased demand for visitor accommodation?
Visitor accommodation was removed from parts of stage one of the review to have a more detailed look at. Specifically, I think it was from the residential chapters. In the business zones, we have it was not removed from the business zones. So it 16.4.4 does provide for visitor accommodation in the revised version. I've got it down as a controlled activity rather than restricted discretionary. And no, I hadn't specifically considered whether the capacity enabled by business mixed use would have an impact on other existing visitor accommodation operators.
Is the reason why it's included, is it because there's a high demand for more visitor accommodation?
I believe so, yes. question. Because of the location of these two, both Anderson Heights and Gorge Road, in close proximity to Wanaka, to the town centres, that does drive the demand for visitor accommodation within walking distance of those centres.
Right. Okay. Now, just moving forward in terms of outdoor living.
Yes.
And it's at your paragraph 1134.
Yes.
You're saying that the zone shouldn't require a minimum outdoor living area rule.
Yes.
Okay, but that's because of the tension that, or the likelihood that the residential activity would likely establish multi units.
What I've tried to do is provide flexibility. So outdoor living is included as a matter of discretion in Rule 16.4.2, the third to last bullet point, which states that where residential units are proposed as part of the development, the provision of open space is provided on site either through private open space or communal open space or a combination thereof. So the purpose of that is to provide flexibility within the nature of the specific development.
Okay. And that open space, that can be provided by way of sort of balcony areas and things like that?
Yes, it provides flexibility for a whole range of mechanisms that would be brought forward in terms of the specific development that would be considered through the resource consent process. And, as it says there, it could be communal space as well. Some worker accommodation, they do have communal space where they've got small units and a communal space for those residents to share.
Turning to the provisions that you provide in Chapter 16. And policy 16.2.1.6, you talk about avoiding undue sensitivity. Is it? Is it avoiding that? Or is it avoiding or reducing the potential?
It's to reduce it. Reduce it. Yes.
Well, it's the potential of adverse instability is the issue, isn't it? Rather than.
Yes.
You want to hope that that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
With policy 16.2.2.9, is that a policy or is it a standard?
It is very prescriptive. I would say that it's a very prescriptive policy.
With just an association with that, there's also a provision in 16.5.7, which is about landscaping.
Yes.
That has, it's the final bullet points in relation to Horn Creek.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering whether that
policy in that region there, maybe there's a requirement for some formal standard.
I'm sorry, I didn't
know. Maybe there's a requirement for some formal standard. Do you think that
at the moment,
the way the rules work, it relies on that policy and the assessment criteria, matters of discretion, to consider whether Horn Creek anything happens?
Yes.
But the policy is so prescriptive, it's virtually a standard. Would it be better to have a standard that that you can get a consent to not comply with, but would be more upfront as to what the council is seeking to do?
Yes. I'll certainly look at that when I revisit it and my new supremacy in the next.
Just within Rule 16.4.2 for buildings.
Yes.
It struck me that the first two bullet points and the bullet point occurring at Horn Creek. Are those assessment criteria or are they matters for discretion?
The two specific ones?
Three of them.
Three of them?
The first two bullet points and then the second to last one.
Certainly the second in terms of the use of the way it's articulated, whether the buildings, the design, yes, I agree on that one. In terms of the first bullet point, again, it has the word weather in it, which is also used in assessment matters. I can have another look at the way that it's articulated. And the Horn Creek one.
Well, the Horn Creek one was almost a standard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than assessment.
I'll look at that in the context of considering shifting it to a standard.
In the 16.4.5 endangered facilities,
yes.
I'm just unclear with that last bullet point, the last matter of discretion.
Yes.
Is it the noise effects on the daycare facilities that are to be considered, or the noise effects of the daycare facilities on other sites?
It's intended to be the noise generated by the daycare facility.
That's the generated effect that's to be considered.
That's correct, in terms of a noise management plan.
Mm.
That's the intent.
It doesn't read to me that way.
Okay.
But it's ambiguous, that's why I asked the question.
Okay.
The only other comment rather than question is in Rule 16.5.8, maximum building height, where you variance for, you're suggesting a range where there's permitted to a certain level, then restricted concession rate. I think that the format used in some of the other things should be used here.
Okay.
There's been a particular style developed, for instance, in the Queenstown Town Centre.
Okay. Yep, I'll make sure that it's consistent in terms of how it's laid out.
Thank you.
been completed.
Okay. Thanks for your great questions.
Well, sir, that concludes the council's case and the officer's reports. Obviously, we've got a lengthy list of matters to work our way through for right reply, and then we'll no doubt the editor as we work through some of those presentations as well.
Yes, that's fine.
You can be assured that we'll be taking lots of notes. But thank you for your consideration of the witnesses and the officers.
Okay, thank you. The case will adjourn until 2 p.m. tomorrow.
Sir.